So today I wanted to discuss two more mitzvahs in the Torah, both related. It's not so easy to see how they're related, but the same terminology is used to refer to both, and they're very close together in the Torah itself, and they certainly are related to one another. In Hebrew we call it ona'a. The word is ona'a. I'll read to you the two different verses we'll discuss, and we'll try to translate what the word means. It's a hard word to translate. It says in the book of Vayikra, chapter 25, verse 14, if you make a sale, you sell to your friend, or you purchase from your friend, one shall not, tonu is a very hard word to translate. We can say, I guess for lack of a better translation, you should not cause any damage or hurt to your brother. So it's talking about a sale or a purchase, and you should make sure not to take advantage or hurt the other party. And then three verses later, in verse 17, in the same chapter, it says again, "Lo sonu ishes hamiso." A person shall not, again, the word is sonu, shall not cause damage or take advantage of their friend. Ve'eresem alkecha shefir God, ki ani Hashem alkechem, for I am Hashem your God. So two times, within a few different verses, it talks about this idea of what we call ona'a. Ona'a, in a general sense, we'll discuss specifics, has two different applications. One is in business, and the main application would be to represent the product appropriately, both in price and in what the product is itself. We'll discuss that. And the second application is onas devarim, we call it, onah with words, which means that you cannot use words to harm other people. Not to insult somebody, not to make someone feel bad, be insensitive, hurt their feelings. So this concept of onah is used in both situations, using words to hurt somebody, and using deceptive business practices to hurt somebody. And I guess in general, the term would refer to the misuse that Rebbe Hirsch writes. It's to take advantage of somebody's weakness. Somebody has a lack of knowledge, a weakness or sensitivity, and you take advantage of them based on sensitivity, either by hurting them financially or hurting them emotionally. That would be ona'a. So I want to discuss both of these applications, both in terms of how we speak and in terms of how we do business. We'll start with the idea of financial ona'a, damaging somebody in a business transaction. So obviously we know we can't steal. We're not dealing here with theft. The theft we know is forbidden. That's something which is obvious. The first application of ona'a in financial dealings is overcharging or undercharging. Now, something which surprises us sometimes, because we know the businesses are there to make money, and customers are trying to get a good deal. But the halacha actually mandates how much a seller can up the price, or how much a buyer can try to deceive the seller into lowering the price. And we'll explain that. But every item has some sort of fair market price. And that market price is based on a lot of things. It could be based on the item, the quality of the item, the brand name. Authorities also bring in the type of store it's in. You know, if you buy the same item in an upscale store, it'll be more expensive than if you buy it in the discount store. It's the same exact item. And that's all taken into account, because the upscale store, the ambiance of the store, the staff of the store, the knowledge of the salespeople, should also contribute to the price. So for instance, let's say there's a certain shirt. I don't know, a shirt. And you can find that same shirt in Neiman Marcus, you can find it in Macy's, you can find it in Marshall's, you know? So you expect that, I guess, Neiman Marcus is supposed to be the higher class store, that Neiman Marcus is going to be a nicer store to walk through, the music will be playing nicely, hopefully the service staff will be more knowledgeable, more helpful. So they have a right to charge more based on that. If you go into Macy's, we'll call that the middle level store. So there, you expect it to be a nice experience, you know, but won't be quite as fancy and luxurious as Neiman Marcus. The Marshall's is the discount experience, where everything is just thrown on the shelves. You just grab what you want and go up and wait in line in the register. So if it's the same exact item, but the expected price is different in each store, and that's okay. Whatever that expected price is, the fair market price based on the item and the store and everything else, the seller cannot go more than a sixth beyond that price, and the buyer should not be paying them less than a sixth below that price. So let's just take an example. Let's say there's a shirt that sells for, let's make it easy numbers because we're talking about a sixth. So the market price of a certain shirt is $60. So if a store is going to sell it for $70, which is over a sixth more than the expected price, that's problematic, halachically. And if the buyer is going to try to get it for $50, it's also problematic. And I'll explain how we get around that and how we're supposed to deal with prices in stores. But that's the idea of ona'a, but both angles.
The math is just clicking in here. You gave, I'm sorry, what you gave is exactly 164, exactly 16 less. You're not to go up to, that's like the fourth falcon. Once you get to fourth falcon, you're done.
No, so let me elaborate on that. So the halacha is that to remain within a sixth of the price, so again, we have a $60 rectum. If you sell between 60 and 70, or the buyer gets it between 50 and 60, so it's less than a variation of a sixth. So at that point, the sale is a valid sale. If some authorities say that it was okay even it's okay to have the price vary within that range. Some authorities say that you're not supposed to do that, but either way, the sale is valid. If it's exactly at a sixth, let's say you sell the item either for 70 or 50, then the buyer or seller, depending on who was the one who was taken advantage of, can actually demand back the extra money. The sale is a valid sale because they demand back the money. So if I go to a store and they charge me 70 for a $6 item, again, assuming we're in a Jewish store and they're under the auspices of a Beis Din, I could actually demand back that $10. But the sale is valid.
How do you know what the fair value of the item is?
That's a good question. So that's something the Beis Din has to determine. If you think that you've been taken advantage of, so the rabbi in the Beis Din has to figure out what. You have to do a survey, there's a lot of factors to take into account. Let's say you go beyond a sixth. Let's say they sell a $60 item for $75. So at that point, you have the right to say the sale is null and void. You can return the item without, even against their will. The Beis Din will force them to take the item back, and you can get your money back. Those are the three different levels. So within a sixth, the sale is valid. You can't do anything about it. Exactly a sixth, you can demand back the extra money, but the sale still remains. And if it's more than a sixth, then the sale is null and void. Again, it both goes for both the buyer and the seller. So that's the idea, and this is all based on the market price. Again, we'll give some examples in a minute to show how it would apply. Now, this is all in terms of price. But let's say the item itself is not what you paid for. So I go into the store, and I'm expecting to buy, a pound of nuts. And really, it wasn't a pound. It was only 3/4 of a pound of nuts. So at that point, I can certainly go back to the store and force them to take the nuts back and get my money back. But that's even if you stay within a sixth, any deviation at all in terms of the actual item, you can retract the sale. This is where halacha talks about time limits on returns as well. There's a time limit. We say you can force them to take back your item, but that's only within the time which the Mishnah calls to go and show it to an expert to be able to assess the price. So let's say I buy an item. I think something's off here. It seems like it's way too expensive. So I go and I bring it to somebody who's knowledgeable about this kind of item. So within that amount of time, I can still bring it back to the store and force them to take it back. But I can't come back 6 months later with it because that's too long. How long it takes to show an expert, that's something also that's up to the Beis Din to determine. That's something that's not so clear necessarily how long that takes. Now, on behalf of the store, it's always considered admirable to take back the item, even if it's been longer than this amount of time. Even 6 months or a year later, it's considered appropriate for them to take the item back. They don't have to. The Beis Din cannot force them. Now, that's the idea of...
I'm sorry,
that it's, even though the Beis Din can't force them to take it back after the time passes to show it to an expert, but it's still always considered... It's always admirable for the store to take it back anyways. So it's called Midas Chasidus. It's appropriate, even though it's not required. Now, there is an idea of disclosure in halacha, which means that as long as the buyer or seller discloses to the other party what they're doing, it's okay. So, for instance, the store has a big sign, sale, and they have the price far below the market price. So the store knows good and well that they're offering this item at a bargain. They know that, and they're going to do it anyways. So in that case, it's fine to buy the item. We don't say that you've taken advantage of the store. That's not an issue. Or vice versa. You go into the store, and they're selling an item way beyond the market price. So if the storekeeper tells you, I want you to know, I'm selling this at the market price is 200, I'm selling this at 300. And he tells you clearly what he's doing, you still say, okay, I'll buy it, so then you've made that decision. That's okay also, halacha. Halachically, that's not a problem. On either side, as long as the buyer or seller is disclosing what's happening, that's not an issue. But the whole problem here is where you're being taken advantage of in that you don't necessarily recognize there's deviation of market price and you're buying it anyways. Like I said before, when it comes to the item itself, though, not the price, the item needs to be exactly as it's supposed to be. If you misrepresent the item, that sale is automatically null and void. Now, beyond this, beyond just the market price issue, there's also an issue of deception. False advertising falls under this category. misrepresenting the item. So like one of the cases is quoted in the Mishnah and quoted also, it's a case applicable nowadays. Let's say you go into a store, let's go back, you're buying a pound of nuts. Now whenever you buy a pound of nuts or a pound of any fruits or vegetables, you don't expect there might be some in there that might be a little bit rotten, a little bit older. That's something which is expected. A certain amount, you know, you're willing to overlook. But let's say the store looks at the top of they have to have it all in one container. And they go to the top of the container to pick off all the bad ones from the top. So the top looks gorgeous. Everything on top looks like it's fresh, beautiful, you know, straight off the tree. Now you buy it, and then you dig in, and deep down, in the mixture, there's all sorts of rotten pieces. So you could tell that, you know, they've deceived you. Because they made it look on top like it was fresh and in good shape, and it really wasn't. So stores aren't allowed to do that, because it's deceptive. If you know what you're buying, they can sell you whatever they want. They can sell you a box of rotten peanuts if they tell you it's rotten peanuts. That's not a problem. But if they're trying to pass it off as fresh, and because they've gone in and they've made it look prettier on top, but on the inside it's really rotten, that's something which is forbidden according to the Torah, and that sale would also you can go demand your money back. Similarly,
is there a percentage, for example, is it going to be 20%? I mean, is there a threshold by which one
There are thresholds of what the expectations are when you buy fruits and vegetables of that type. You can do a comparison. And also, this is a case where the store specifically went on top and took off all the bad ones. I mean, they're trying to deceive you in that way. Now, another similar concept would be, let's say they try to pass off an older product for a new product. So let's say you're going to buy some furniture. And the store has an old chair that's 25 years old. And they've painted it, and they've reupholstered it. And for all you can tell, it looks like it's brand new. So they need to disclose to you that this has been reupholstered and painted. They can't sell you an old chair and passing it off as new, because that's not the product that you're trying to buy. On the other hand, let's say you're going to buy a used car. It's 15 years old. So a 15-year-old car, you can expect is going to have some issues. You know, so if the issues which are in this car is the normal issues of a 15-year-old car, they don't have to disclose anything. Because as long as they tell you it's 15 years old, then you're supposed to expect problems with that car. So again, as long as it's in the range of normal, that's not an issue. But as soon as you're trying to pass it on for something, it's not. Obviously, turning back the odometer is certainly a problem, you know. But slapping on a new paint job and things to make it look like it's better than it is, that's a deceptive practice. Now, the Mishnah even discusses, this is not the halakha, but the Mishnah even discusses, you know, can a store try to distribute candies to kids to attract the parents to come in? Right, so the Mishnah even has the possibility that that's forbidden because it's, you know, it's a practice which is trying to give them an unfair advantage. Now, luckily, I believe that's not a problem. You know, but that is one thing which is discussed in the Mishnah as a possible issue because everything has to be represented 100% correctly. At your store, it's all about honesty, it's about integrity. You know, so based on all this, you know, we all have this image in our heads of like the shrewd salesman. He's able to take any item and pass it off as something incredible and sell it to any customer who walks in. And he's considered like the top salesman of the company. You know, that's like, you know, the classic, you know, the classic idea of like the used car salesman, you know, trying to get everything by and make any sale he possibly can. Selling a bad product at high prices. So that concept is not a Torah concept. You know, that's something which unfortunately has become a very modern American concept. And these guys are considered great salespeople. But in the Torah, or the shrewd shopper also, the shrewd shopper will go into a store and convince the storekeeper to sell them things at bargain prices. You know, your item's not so great, the store down the street selling it at half the price, and you know, I'm like, I'll have to shop here anyways, and you bargain them down to nothing. So again, if he knows what you're doing, then that's not a problem. But if you're just trying to take advantage of the guy's ignorance or need to make a sale, then that's it. That's a problem according to the Torah. A Torah salesman or a Torah shopper is somebody who's upfront, who's honest, who's clear about the product. The buyer doesn't trick the seller in any way. You know, the ignorant person, I guess in American culture, the ignorant customer is the best customer, right? But in the Torah, if you have an ignorant customer, you're actually obligated to inform them about what's happening. You can't just let them be taken advantage of. So that's the idea of a store and a salesman and a shopper in halakha. Now, what can you do? I mean, the Torah certainly encourages business. Throughout the entire Talmud, there's always practices which the rabbis institute in order to encourage commerce. We want stores to succeed. So what are you allowed to do? So as long as you don't deceive anybody, and as long as the end price is within the realm of what's okay, as we discussed, within that sixth, so you're certainly allowed to praise your product, about virtues actually has. You're allowed to convince the customer. You're even allowed to start with higher prices in order to bargain down to the proper price. That's okay to do halachically. As long as that end price ends at the right in the right range, it's not an issue. You can't have the end price end too high, and you can't have the end price end too low. So you're allowed to be a salesman, according to the Torah. Just the salesman has to be upfront, honest, and represent the products as they're supposed to be. Now, yeah. It applies to real estate. The difference is when it comes to real estate, if you do buy it at a higher real price, you can't force them to return it with real estate. You're not allowed to sell it if the price is too high. You're not allowed to force a return if it is too high. It's services as well. Services also now when it comes to services, it's very much harder, I think, to find a fair market price because services are something which vary in every single house, every single job. But certainly, someone who offers services is not allowed to charge an exorbitant price. And that would fall within the same category.
Like labor
at $200. Yeah, I guess you have to see what's expected out there in the world. Yeah, but if the price for labor is just far beyond, that'd also be a Torah problem. And obviously, the concept here is that life's not about money. Life's not about making the sale. We know that Hashem is the one who provides our livelihood. Money comes from Hashem. We have to engage in honest and proper practices, and we trust that Hashem will make sure that we have the money we need. The Torah, the rabbis certainly encourage business. It's necessary for society to function. You have to have business functioning society. It has to be with honesty, with integrity. It's not just about money-hungry people trying to make the best sale or purchase the cheapest product. I just want to share with you a few interesting cases. This book is called Money, the Bottom Line. It's a Feldheim book written by Rabbi Moshe Hillel Kaufman. But he hasn't heard a lot of interesting practical cases. I just want to share them with you. Let's take a few cases here. Here, it says that Shmuel wants to sell you a glass of soda at his fancy restaurant lounge for $10 in the glass. Yankel, who is a sidewalk vendor, he wants to sell you a cold can of the same exact soda for $1.50. And the supermarket down the street is selling that same exact can for 40 cents. So does anybody here have an issue of ona? I mean, you have a range from 40 cents to $10 of this product. Right.
Right.
For the atmosphere.
Starbucks and have a price where you can go sit down and relax. If you buy it on the street in a can, it's cheaper, but you don't get the service.
Right, very good. So that's what we said, that the ambiance type of restaurant, type of store makes a difference in the price. And everyone here is selling it at a proper price halachically. Because when you go into the lounge, you're not paying just for the store, you're paying for the ambiance, relaxation, the music, the atmosphere, that's what you're paying for. When you're buying it from the vendor on the streets, the convenience you're paying for. And when you go in the supermarket, that's when you're buying just for the product to take home, wherever it is. So that that case, everybody would be in good shape. Another case quoted here is that you're at the flea market, and you notice one of the vendors is selling a famous brand color printer for $125. Now you're concerned with Ono as a shopper because that same printer usually sells for $179. So he's selling it for a good almost $60 below the price. So what should you say to this person? Are you allowed to buy that printer? How do you disclose what's happening? So his situation here is that what if you tried to be a little bit you want to make your disclosure because you want to follow the halacha, but you're a little bit deceptive to him. You say, "I'm so excited to buy this printer for only $125 because it's way worth $1,000, and I'm buying it from you on condition that you forgive the onah." So you tell him that I want you. It's a Jewish vendor we're talking to. I'm telling you, I want you to forgive this onah. However, you overstate the price by far. The price is really $179. You say, really, this goes for $1,000. I'm paying such a great price here. So would that be okay? Would the exaggerated statement be sufficient, or do you have to be more accurate in your statement? Right, so Judaism would be more accurate, which is what it says here. That an exaggerated statement is not sufficient because he thinks you're joking around. He doesn't take it seriously either. If you tell him, listen, my friend, I want you to know they're selling this printer down the road for $180, and he knows he's selling $125, so then that's proper disclosure. If he says, okay, that's my price, then you can buy it. But if you exaggerate to the point, you're saying it's $1,000 down the road, so he thinks you're just kidding around, you're just trying to make a relationship with him, whatever it is, he's not going to take you seriously. That's the idea of disclosure.
You just read the book, this applies to dealers with people
This applies to Jewish people. It does not apply to non-Jewish. A non-Jewish store, no, it does not apply. Only to, for Jewish buyers and sellers.
Because it says your brother.
Yes, exactly. It says that your brother, when you're purchasing from your brother, from your nation. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, between Jews and Jews.
Late, apparently there's a 1/6.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
Is there a scriptural basis for this? Where does this 1/6 come from?
The 1/6 does not seem to be scriptural. The Baal HaTurim finds a hint to it in the wording used because there's a. It says. Is it? I can't remember where he finds. He finds actual a hint to it in the verse itself. Okano. No, he says it's the letter. I can't remember which letters it is. The letters are. Sixth. I don't remember what his hint is to it. But it's the rabbis came up with the price, which they felt that within a sixth you're willing to forgo. I mean, if it's a little bit off, like, okay, so it was a little bit off, you know? That rabbis understood that a sixth or more is where a person gets upset about it. You know, that's why they gave a sixth as the price.
So they kind of made it tekana.
Yes, they made the tekana of a sixth. I mean, the Torah says you can't do ona. The rabbis said, well, what is the actual amount which is going to cause an issue? They said it's a sixth. That's where that comes from. And again, if a store sells you something for, you know, for a few cents off, you're not going to be so, you know, you're not going to like, well, it's not even worth your time to go back and argue about it, you know? If it's already a six, people might get upset about it. That's the idea. So now let's go to some cases of deceptive practices. Now let's say it's right before the Labor Day vacation weekend, and Michael's 99-cent store is selling small cans of liquid baby formula with an expiration date only 2 weeks away. Michael wants to place a clear, visible sign on the display which says, baby formula good for your Labor Day weekend travel needs. So, Labor Day is this weekend. This will expire in 2 weeks. And he puts the sign up, so he's trying to disclose this is going to expire soon, but he doesn't say it explicitly. He says that this will be good for your Labor Day travel needs. Will this sign suffice, or does he have to say clearly it will expire in 2 weeks? That's the question.
Say that one more time. Late code or late date or something.
Late date, so you think it'd be more specific. Right, so you should be alarmed. Why is it such an expensive product? I should take a look at it.
Late date warns you to, or short date warns you to look at the date.
Right.
Good for the Labor Day weekend. Might be an enticement to shorten inventory before the weekend.
Right, so it's not clear enough.
It's misleading.
It's misleading because you think it's a fine product because he's trying to encourage you to buy it for this weekend. So the rabbi says, such a sign would at best be ambiguous and would not suffice. Michael should place a clearly visible sign on the display which says, baby formula expires in 2 weeks. And seemingly a short date would also be sufficient. You know, that should be fine. Yeah, right. And then he can say good for your Labor Day travel weekend needs, but you know that's you have to disclose it's a short date so people aren't deceived if you're not expecting a short date.
Can we bring up a case situation?
Okay.
Say there's some stores that have a practice that they, you know, you walk through and you see they have discounts and they look good. And however, it doesn't disclose the expiration date is like 10 days.
Right.
But you can look at the product and see and figure out, they're selling it because it's going to expire soon.
Right.
But the vendor themselves don't say anything.
Right.
They just say this is on sale.
Right. So the question would be, is the expectation of a customer on a sale item to check the dates? I would say no. Would the expectation be that a customer is supposed to check the date on a sale item? I would think it's not the expectation of a customer. You expect to go into a store and you're getting a quality product. Just like we just said, the store needs to disclose if it's a short date or past expiration. They need to put a sign. This is past expiration date. If not, then that'd be an issue of ona. That's a deceptive practice. That's important. If you could argue that we expect the customers to check that every product, then it'd be different. But I don't think that's an expectation to have. You go into a normal store, right. Now, if you're going into some sort of like discount store, secondhand store, something like that, so then the expectation should be you should really check over the item. But if it's a normal everyday supermarket or clothing store, then you're expecting to get a quality product.
I'll tell you the experience I had yesterday. I was in Liquid,
Yeah.
I shouldn't say what it was anyway, but so I was looking for a safer over there.
Yeah.
And my friend whom I'm going to study with sent me the hyperlink on my email. I showed him this image and said, do you have this safer? He goes, yeah, we've got it over here on this bookshelf. Well, the link was to Amazon. But the Amazon link is good because it gives you a picture of the thing. And I didn't really know. So anyway, I clicked on the thing. I said, so he takes me over. Here it is. So I look at the price that he's offering versus the Amazon. The Amazon's it was about a $25 book.
Yeah.
The Amazon was selling it for 21, maybe 20. In other words, it was a 20% discount if right. I went with Amazon.
With Amazon.
What would you have to pay for shipping?
Zero, because yeah. I have Prime. But that's a story. So right. I don't know. You know, I decided not to buy from. I bought other things.
Right, but I think his market price would be based on the other stores around. I don't think you can compare, like we're saying, a little fancy restaurant lounge or street vendor. You know, there's something about a physical brick-and-mortar store versus an online store, you know? Amazon's always cheaper, yeah, right. Right, so there... No, so that's, you're bringing up an interesting point, because on the same exact verse we're discussing, it says when you buy from your neighbor or you sell to your neighbor, Rashi says, why does it say your neighbor? Because it's encouraging you to buy from Jewish stores over non-Jewish stores, or sell to Jews. So there is an idea, the question, how far does that go? Because if the Jewish store is way more expensive than the non-Jewish store, so there's a limit in halacha. But if the prices are somewhat comparable, it definitely is proper to buy from the Jewish store. That's obvious. And that's Rashi says that here on this verse. Yeah, right. Yeah, so it's important to put that. Right. Here, we'll do one more question, then we'll move on to the next topic. One more question is that Pinchas's novelty store just received a shipment of watches with a manufacturer suggested retail price of $39.99. Can he put up a sign which says, watches normally $39.99, now only $19.99? Now it's only $19.99. Meaning that the suggested retail price was $39.99. This store has never sold it at that price ever, but he puts up a sign, regularly $39.99, now $19.99. Would that be a deceptive sign, or is that a sign of, that's okay? So it's a deception. You think you're getting this great sale, and really this is ambiguous.
You're saying the watch really doesn't cost $39?
No, it's the manufacturer's suggested retail price. That's what's on the boxes. So he says, a big sale. Watch is normally $39.99, now I'm selling it for
$19.99. If he said MSRP.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah, okay. But the sign says normally. It doesn't say MSRP. It says normally. So the answer is, it's deceitful to claim regular selling price of $39.99 when it's only the manufacturer's suggested retail price, and not the price which the watches are normally sold. So Art's right. If it's said on there, manufacturer's suggested retail price, then that's fine, because he's being very clear and upfront. So that's that idea.
If it usually marks it down, that
might be deceptive, too. Yeah, but as long as it says where that original price is coming from, yeah. You know, you can look at the box, you also see it says on the suggested retail price.
MSRP is this. Our price.
Yeah, our price. This. Yeah, I don't see any problem with that. But the problem is he claimed it as his normal price, and that's the problem. So again, it goes on and on. But the Jewish stores and Jewish buyers have to be aware of these halachas. And again, unless there is some clear disclosure, these are Torah issues. You know, from the verse of the Torah itself, and it's something that we all should be aware of. Now the other category of ona'a is onah with words, onah devarim. And the common denominator seems to be simply taking advantage of another human being, hurting another human being. It's hard to see the exact connection between the two, but they're both grouped together in the Torah, and they're both called by onah. It's the same word is used for both. Now, onah means that you're going to hurt somebody with your words. Being insensitive with your words, being hurtful with words. In addition to the regular prohibition of hurting others with words, it's even worse if you use words to hurt a convert, or to hurt a widow. The Torah has additional prohibitions on those who are themselves are already very sensitive and susceptible to hurt. So we can't use our words to hurt any Jew, but even more so, we cannot use our words to hurt somebody who's already sensitive. Now, obviously, a person shouldn't flat out insult others and make offensive remarks. I think that's obvious to us. But on us, devarim, using words to hurt others applies in more subtle ways as well. So the examples that are given in the Gemara, cited also by the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, here are some examples. If you go to somebody who's a convert, and you say, you know, remember what it used to be like when you were not Jewish, you know, you try to use that as a way to offend them. So that's, you know, you're going to cause them negative feelings. You go to somebody who's become more observant, and you say, I remember you used to, you know, eat the cheeseburgers, and now you don't, you know, like, so then that's in a way, you're going, it's very offensive. You go to the convert, and you tell him, how could that same mouth that used to eat the pork chops study the Torah? You know, obviously these comments are uncalled for, insensitive, and this would be a nas devarim.
Yeah. How is this different from the other prohibition against embarrassing somebody?
It's not so different. It could be all part of the same rubric. But if you'll see, these aren't all embarrassing. Some of these things will also just be hurtful. The next example, let's say somebody, God forbid, is suffering, you know, has an illness, is suffering, and you go to them and you say, you know, God only punishes those people who deserve it. All right? So how insensitive could that be? So that's not embarrassing, that's just hurtful. That's offensive. Now, maybe it's true. I mean, when someone is suffering, it could be God is trying to teach them a lesson. Whether that's true or not, that's irrelevant. You can't hurt somebody with those words. It's not appropriate. Let's say somebody asks you a question, and you're with a friend, and you know your friend is clueless on this topic. So you say to him, hey, Bob, what do you think about this? Now, you know Bob is clueless. So that's hurtful to Bob, because he's going to have to say, I have no idea. You know, I know what you're talking about. So that's called an astavarim, because this, again, that could be embarrassing as well. That's an astavarim, that your words are now going to be hurtful to a person who is sensitive and who has a weakness. Some authorities point out trying to scare somebody else, you know, whether you tell them a scary story just to scare them, on purpose to scare them, whether you come out and say boo, you know, and cause a person a scare. That's an astavarim. You're using your words to hurt somebody. This is an interesting example, which is quoted halachically, which is probably all of us may have done at times. If you're in a store and you're not interested in buying anything, but you're curious about the price, so you go to the salesman and you say, how much does that go for? Now the salesman thinks that he's going to make a sale. He gets excited. Really, you have no intent to buy the product. You just want to know what the price is. So that's a nas devarim, because your words are going to let this person down. Now you're allowed to, again, you can disclose to the person your intent. You know, I don't plan on buying anything today. I'm just curious what's the price. That's fine. That's no issue with that at all. But you act in a way that makes the person think that you are interested in making a purchase, and then you are not interested in making the purchase. That's a nas devarim. If you want to shop around for prices, that's totally fine. Because there you do have an intent to buy, and if someone gave you a bargain, you'd buy it. Right? That's totally fine, because deep down your intent is, I want to buy this product. You know, there's a long shot I'll buy it from this store, but there's a chance. You know, if he gives me a good deal, if he's a great salesman and he's very friendly, and remember, he might convince me, so that's fine. I can ask him the price. But if you have no intent at all, you walk into the luxury jewelry store, and you see this fancy $100,000 diamond necklace, which you would never in your life even dream of buying, but you just wonder how much these things go for. So unless you disclose to them, I don't plan on buying it, I'm just curious, then that's a problem with nas devarim, because then your words are hurting this person. We discussed lifnei iver. You can't put a stumbling block in front of a blind man. Yeah. And this is trying to. This also is giving bad advice to a person is also, I mean, some prohibitions double up, you know. A lot of books will put these things together. They'll actually say it could be an us devarim, and lif neiver, and you know, other things. Now, you're not loving your neighbors yourself, you're hating somebody. Oh, there's a lot of things. You know, words are very powerful, and words can actually violate many Torah prohibitions if used in the wrong way.
I have a very similar question.
Yeah.
When you're talking about the laws of how much profit and the sixth, that seems to me like in the category of business law, what you're left rather than upcurting words.
Right. Yeah, I mean, again, na'ah is used in both categories, but the common denominator is taking somebody's ignorance or weakness or sensitivity and exploiting it. That's really the common ground here. But using words in the wrong way could hit on several Torah prohibitions because, you know, words have that power, and you know, and you're right. But these examples are given in all different categories. Yeah.
Prices or products, and if somebody comes over, you say, "I'm just looking, like you don't want to waste any of this time because you know that you're not going to probably buy anything at that time." But just say, you know, you want to do your own research. As long as you don't bother the person, you know, the salesman, and you don't let him spend time with you. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. As long as you don't mislead the person. You know, it's expected people walk in stores and look around. That's why anything's expected. If you start asking the salesman all sorts of questions, and, you know, and he's showing you around, and you have no thoughts of buying anything, you're just trying to take advantage of the person's time, that's the problem. So this is the idea of an us. I mean, we could come up with a million examples of this. But really, any time where your words are going to hurt somebody, whether it be through embarrassment, whether it be through letting them down, whether it be through insulting or offending them, whether it be through causing them to remember, what? Whether it be business, whether it be through causing them to remember bad memories of their past, anything you do with words which would hurt somebody else, it falls into onas devarim. So to be very careful with our words. The rabbis say that onas devarim, ona with your words, is more serious than ona, than financial ona. The rabbis say that it's something which God punishes very severely, and the Gemara says that there's, you know, for many things, you know, God's patient. God waits. God wants us to repent. When it comes to Anas Devarim, the way the Talmud describes it, that God wants to take action immediately. God's, when you hurt somebody through words, hurt somebody's emotions and feelings, it's something which is considered so severe in God's eyes that the payback from God will be much more immediate than when it comes to other sins. So it's a scary thing for us to think about. As the rabbis compare, I mean, we understand that words are. In the Tanakh itself compares words, life and death in the hands of the tongue, it says in the Tanakh. Words can be arrows, words can be like bullets. You know, words are something which are so powerful. And they can make or break somebody's life, make or break somebody's day. Positive words uplift the person and make them feel great. Negative words can ruin a person's life. And that's how extreme it can be. So God, when it comes to money, okay, so we all get upset when we're taken advantage of financially. We get over it because, okay, you know, Even if it's a lot of money, okay, eventually we move past it. When it comes to our emotions and feelings, sometimes it's very hard to move past it. You can ruin someone's reputation, you can ruin someone's self-esteem, and there's a lot you can ruin with words. So the Talmud says that onas devarim is actually a much more serious prohibition than financial onah. So that's this idea. So this, just to sum up, you know, we have to look at people that we're here not to hurt others, not to take advantage. We can't look out just for ourselves. We're trying to be honest people. We want the best for everybody around. So when it comes to business, we're not trying to trick anybody. You know, you're not a good salesman because you passed off a lousy product at a high price. That's not a good salesman. A good salesman, according to Torah, is somebody who is upfront and honest, who cares, who gives good information. Again, you're allowed to convince. You're allowed to extol your product. That's not a problem. But it has to be with only virtues that are actually true. It has to be within the proper range of price. When it comes to using words as well, we have to make sure our words are always positive, our words are uplifting, our words are inspiring, and we have to make sure we don't use words in any way which could hurt somebody else. Those are the two different prohibitions of onah. Any questions? So I spoke about that at the beginning. It's hard to translate. I mean, the Hebrew root word seems to be the word yud nun hei. That's based on my research. Yud nun hei. Yeah. Al tonu, yud nun hei. It's very hard to find an exact translation to that. Again, the loose translation would be hurting or taking advantage of, but I think that's a loose translation. I don't know how what an exact translation could be. Anyone can find one. I'd like to hear a good better translation.
A category of mitzvah or one mitzvah?
Yeah, well, it's a category because, I mean, you have two verses here in Vikra, chapter 25, not doing onah in business, not doing onah with words. The Torah repeats that you can't, altonas a ger, you cannot do onah to a ger, to a convert. We talk about afflicting others. So the word is used several times in the Torah for this idea of afflicting, hurting, taking advantage of others. That's where the word comes from. The exact translation of processor in English I find hard to find. Yeah. That's with an I and not with an L. Yeah, different word. Yeah. Saying the word used for Yom Kippur, that's with an I. In Yom Kippur it says, Ta'anu is nafsho seichem, but that's a different word. It's a different letter. Okay. Fine.